Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are visiting with a dear and longtime friend of mine, Ambassador Henry Cooper. He has been the chairman of Applied Research Associates. He is a senior associate with a marvelous organization, the National Institute of Public Policy. He's been a visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and he has been, not least, the chairman of the board of High Frontier, the organization Danny Graham founded to try to champion particularly space-based missile defenses, because he understood so well the importance of that, as he called it, high frontier. And Hank, let's talk about that next, because I think this is a key piece that even today seems to be eluding a lot of policymakers, perhaps not so much the new Trump team, but certainly most of those who've been in senior positions since you left office as the director of the Strategic Defense Initiative Organization under George H.W. Bush. The role of space, Hank, particularly for defending this country against ballistic missile attack, why is that such a controversial subject when it seems so straightforward and necessary?
I don't know. It's why is it so difficult? I think it's the legacy again of the ABM Treaty and those who fostered this mutual assured destruction idea, and the notion that we would be most safe if we were vulnerable and simply relied on threatening our enemies by retaliation, which seems to be a morally corrupt idea in the first place. And I think that's the way Reagan viewed it. And when you start to think about serious defenses to protect everyone, and especially now that people are waking up to the growing vulnerability that we have to what's called hypersonic, super high speed maneuvering vehicles that initially are launched perhaps into the outer space area and orbit above the Earth and then come and maneuver through the atmosphere or maybe not even make it into outer space. And they can be launched from most anywhere. And now China and Russia are advancing those issues. Well, it becomes obvious when you think about this in just a few moments that the only sure way of building an effective defense against that is engaging in space to counter it. And that's becoming apparent. Now the commander of STRATCOM has essentially said the same thing. There are advocates, again, and this isn't the first time, that there ought to be a separate space force, as they refer to it, separate from the Air Force, to be responsible for the coming battles in space and from space that are obvious to anybody who thinks very hard about this for some time. And that's just the technical reality of science moving ahead with things. And we have limited ourselves for all these years from building defensive systems. And that legacy lives on, by the way, because of the arguments of the past that to do this would be destabilizing, it would provoke an arms race and so on. And of course, the history of the Cold War, even with the SDI initiative before it was destroyed by the Clinton administration. The first thing they did was to take the stars out of Star Wars, as Les Aspin said, and not only kill the program bureaucratically inside, but they caused the dispersal of the technologists working those issues. Well, the Chinese have caught up with us now with the technologies that we were pursuing, and we're trying to reinvent it. And it's been... So anyway, so that's why space is important.
Let me just ask you about one other piece of this, because it seems to me that at least at the rhetorical level, if not substantively, one of the other arguments has been that even aside from the anti-ballistic missile treaty and the sort of idée fixe that it became for the arms controllers and the left more generally, that had to be preserved at all cost. It was the sine qua non of this avoiding the apocalypse in terms of threats to the United States and the Soviet Union that we're going to rely on, as you said, mutual assured destruction. But there was also this space weapons treaty out there, too. And we always heard this argument, you know, so well from your days at the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, the late and unlamented ACTA, to my way of thinking. But this notion that space had been a pristine environment as a result of that treaty and mustn't be contaminated by having weapons there, even if they were not nuclear weapons, like, say, a program you worked on, which we'll talk about here in a moment, Brilliant Pebbles. But talk a little bit about that sort of theology and what the reality has been for decades, going back to the first rockets about contaminating space with weaponry.
I've never understood the argument, and I don't understand how it carried the weight that it carried in the public domain with, the mainstream media, the whatever else, because it was obvious, seems obvious to me, that when you build a defense against weapons, nuclear weapons, in fact, that are headed your way, and you intercept them in outer space, that somebody was there first threatening you. And so why we could talk about space as being some sort of sanctuary for our defenses against attacks that were coming at us through space, and that's been happening since World War II in the German invention of the V-2 rocket. So, I mean, this has been an absurd proposition. I started my career at Bell Labs working on defenses against that threat in the 1960s, early 1960s. And in fact, I helped design the only system we've ever deployed for homeland defense up until the recent times. It was Nike Zeus initially, then Sentinel and Safeguard, and it was not a very effective defense. But we've been fighting this issue since then. I mean, and it's an absurd proposition. Space is a place. I mean, it is not a sanctuary.
And as you were saying a moment ago, Hank, our adversaries have certainly understood that, and we'll talk more in a moment about all that the Chinese are doing. But just if you could, we're going to have a lot of time for this, but just very quickly, Hank, walk us through the physics of this. Why being able to defend our country, this vast, 3,000-mile-wide landmass, to say nothing of Alaska and Hawaii as well, why it is simply the only practicable place to do this, particularly cost-effectively, is from space. And specifically introduce what you did during your time as the director of the Strategic Defense Initiative Organization with respect to actually building systems that could be deployed there to protect us.
We referred to the problem you're talking about as a global defense. And frankly, Boris Yeltsin eventually agreed with us. And one of the other great losses was when the Clinton administration came in, they cut off where we were in the discussions with the Russians at that time. It would be a bit different world today had those talks been completed. Boris Yeltsin actually agreed on an agenda, which included space, for our global defense. At the same time, he agreed to deeper reductions of offensive weapons, giving a lie to this argument that it only provokes an arms race. And I spent 5 years. This was Reagan's proposal, in fact, to go back to our theme for the day, that we find a way to cooperate with the Soviets and then the Russians to jointly protect the world community against this threat of ballistic missiles. The fact is that if missiles are launched, let's say out of North Korea, to the north to attack the United States, it doesn't fly over water, so you can't protect the nation from the sea if they're launched to the north from ocean, from Aegis that doesn't have that capability. And so we have these sites up in Alaska to catch them coming over the pole. But if you had a system in space, you could shoot them down even while they're rising from their launch pads and their rockets are burning and they're most vulnerable, because anything you intercept a missile with there, the rocket there, will lead the rocket to destroy itself. We've seen that happen when we've launched satellites and had a failure. We saw it happen with the shuttle when the crew went down with Challenger and Columbia, whichever it was now. I mean, it's happened a couple of times. But during the launch, and there is a failure, in that case, due to an O-ring that froze, and the rocket destroys itself. So no other system gives you this capability globally to shoot down rockets in their boost phase.
Especially cost effectively. Hank Cooper, we have to pause for just one more moment. We'll be right back with more on why the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty was such an impediment to this and why it was such a big deal when George W. Bush extricated ourselves from it. That and more with Hank Cooper right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.